I want to look for a few moments at verse 42 and verse 43. Matthew 27, verse 42 and 43. It's been well said that many a true word is spoken in jest, and I suppose nowhere is that more evident in the Bible than at the cross of Jesus Christ. There were many enemies of Jesus Christ gathered round the cross, from ordinary individuals making their way in and out of the city and passing by the way of Calvary, and from the religious leaders, the priests and the scribes, who are seen here in these verses to be leading in the mockery. But while many a true word is spoken in jest, many words here spoken in jest were also true of the Lord Jesus. It was in mockery that they said he saved others. It was in mockery that they said himself he cannot save. It was in mockery that they said in verse 43 he trusted in God. It was in mockery that they uttered all these words and they mocked his claims as being the Son of God. But all those things, however they were spoken, were all true. And they really sum up who Christ is and what Christ did in his life. First thing, verse 42, he saved others. That's a matter of fact. Jesus saved others. Up until this point, Lord Jesus had gone about the business of saving. Since he stepped foot over the threshold of time and entered into this world, he was about the business of saving. His whole mission was to save. You remember that he said, "I am come to seek and to save that which was lost." And he not only had that as his mission, he actually accomplished that mission. He healed people not merely from diseases, he healed people from the power of sin. You remember that there's a man possessed with a legion of demons, and he cast the demons out with his word. He saved him. He saved people from depravity, like the woman taken in adultery. He said, "Go and sin no more, lest the worst thing come unto thee." He was saving all kinds of people from all kinds of sins. He saved Nicodemus, who was a self-righteous individual who had higher thoughts of Jesus than many others, but he was still in his sin when he met him in John chapter 3. But he saved Nicodemus, and Nicodemus was one of those that honoured Jesus after his death. He saved others. And you know, that's not just past tense, that's present tense as well. Jesus is still saving. We don't often see it on the large scale that we would like, but it doesn't change the fact. The Lord is saving. In some parts of the world, he's saving people in large numbers. You go to China, more Christians in China per square mile or per head of population than in any other part of the world. In communist China, it's still persecuted, yet the Lord is still saving. He saved others. He's saving others. What's more, he will save others. And you know, when we go out to do this business for God this week, or even if you're not able to join us, if you're praying, you're still engaged in the work, and the result of the prayers and the work that's done for Jesus' sake, the Lord will save others. God does not give every opportunity to preach only to see those opportunities mocked and come to nothing. He's about the business of saving. That's matter of fact number one. Matter of fact number two, verse 43, is this, that he trusted in God. I'm always interested by the expression it's used in the New Testament, which talks about our being something like this, being sanctified by faith that is in him. Well, it talks sometimes about the faith of Jesus Christ, use words like that. And we know we've got to have faith in Jesus Christ. But of course, if Christ had not been faithful, and if he had not done what he was called to do, and if he had not trusted in God, then there would be no cause for us to put our trust in him. We wouldn't have reason to do it. And it would be misplaced if it had been put in him. But he trusted in God. How do we know that Jesus trusted in God? Well, he had to trust in God because he was in the days of his humiliation. It seems a strange thing that it should be said concerning our Creator that he trusted in God. And yet, in a state of humiliation, he had to. He came in the form of a servant, and as coming as a servant, he had to trust. He had to humble himself and come in the form of a man. And as such, he had to trust. As such, he had to live. As such, he had to trust. Every day he had to depend. Every day he had to pray. He couldn't take shortcuts by his miraculous power to meet his needs. He had to trust. He had to pray. Jesus trusted. Because Jesus trusted in his Father every step of the way, you and I might safely trust in him. Do you realize that when Jesus was on the cross, he was still trusting? The Psalm 22 opens with these words, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? It's a prophecy of Jesus' death on the cross. And in that psalm, as you go down it, you'll see a number of things by which the speaker takes confidence in his hour of trial. One of the things was this, his childhood memories. Childhood memories are a wonderful thing, and if you get to old age and look back, and you can enjoy them even more, I suppose. But look, in days of difficulty, sometimes it's nice to look back. Sometimes childhood memories, memories of God's goodness to us in our youth and in our infancy, sometimes those are the things which stabilise us and keep us true, keep us right, keep us encouraged. Jesus had childhood memories, and I believe that on the cross he remembered what God the Father had done for him in his childhood. Psalm 22 says, for thou art the one that did make me hope when I was upon my mother's breast. Jesus never said a word in eulogising Mary, but he said a word in eulogising and praising his Father. Thou didst make me hope when I was upon my mother's breast. He was trusting. He trusted as a child. He trusted as a youth. He trusted as an adult. He trusted as a full-grown man. He was trusting in life. He was trusting in death. He trusted in God. And because he trusted in God, we can safely trust in him, in his broken body, and in his shed blood to save us. This was the blood of one that trusted. This was the blood of a perfect, sinless, spotless Jesus. This is the broken body of a perfect, impeccable Christ. Therefore, we can trust in him. That's the second fact. And then finally, verse 43 says, he said, I am the Son of God. Lots of people tell us that Jesus never claimed to be the Son of God. Well, his enemies said that he said so. Would they compliment him by a lie? Of course they wouldn't. They knew that he had claimed to be the Son of God. I mentioned some time ago on a couple of occasions about some group of ecumenical churches in the Waveney district. I don't know what churches it included, can't remember what churches it included, but on their website, under their statement of faith, they have this: Jesus never said, I am the Son of God. Oh, well, come on, and they come back to Matthew 27. Even his enemies said that he said so. Jesus is the Son of God, and it's proved at the cross. Proved at the cross, isn't it? It's proved at the cross when he's suffering, and it's proved at the cross by those that crucified him. And you'll read that at the end of it all, when the centurion saw the earthquake and the things that were done and heard all that transpired that day, what was his testimony? Truly this man is the Son of God. And that's our witness here today at the Lord's table. He said the same thing. Truly this man is the Son of God. He saved others. He trusted in God. He's the Son of God.